scholars, it was better to actually to emphasize this gap between the middle class opposition on the one hand and regular people who are in favor of Putin or Lukashenko. So that's why this is not a passive revolution, and just too many fundamental differences from what Gramsci was talking about. However, Gramsci is actually useful with the concept of hegemony crisis. And of course, I believe you've been talking about like 5 days about this, and probably this was the most used and misused and abused concept. And yeah, Perry Anderson just recently published a book, H Word, because just so many people use it in so many different meanings, and just not even pretending to give like a proper understanding of what is hegemony, but to point to the most substantive Gramscian fragments in the Prison Notebooks, where he analyzes hegemony in the context of the specifically political development of social classes in the degree of their homogeneity and self-consciousness. So political organization of the social classes and also the consciousness development of the social classes. So first, he starts from the so-called economic corporate stage, when merchants are organized and think about merchant interests, and industrialists are thinking about industrialists' interests, and these fractions of ruling class or subaltern classes are organized and mobilized just at themselves, economic corporate stage, thinking primarily about the purely economic interests. But then the class consciousness stage, when the understanding of the interest of the whole class of bourgeoisie or proletariat develops, and one fraction of that class is capable to present their particular interests as the interest of the whole class. And then the final stage is actually hegemony. The political, intellectual, and moral leadership of one class over the others. So when the interests of certain fraction of the class, certain group within the class, could be presented as the interest of the whole class, but also as the interest of other classes, and in extreme, as the national interests. And fundamentally, this is not just about claim. Yeah, I'm speaking on behalf of the whole nation. But this is also the capacity to at least partially fulfill the interests of other groups and classes. And therefore, that's this difference between coercion and consent. The hegemonic class is capable to mobilize the rational, active, participatory consent with its leadership. And these are all very important concepts, because hegemony is not just irrational manipulation, it's actually a rational understanding of the intersection of our interests. It's active consent, it's not simply passive consent, because I support Putin, because if not Putin, who else? It's an active consent, it's an enthusiastic consent, and it's participation. And that's why hegemony requires specific institutions, like political parties, civil society institutions, press, clubs, civil society organizations, which mobilize an active participatory consent with the rule of some class. But in the post-Soviet societies, we had rather hegemony crisis. Fundamentally, hegemony crisis is the crisis of political representation, where there is the break between the interest of the specific social groups and their political representatives. If hegemony is about leadership, hegemony crisis is that when we just stop believing those people who claim to be our leaders. Crisis is is a long process. It's not necessarily an event, and Gramsci has very much discussed distinction between organic crisis and conjunctural crisis. Conjunctural, something short, occasional, accidental, but organic crisis is a permanent crisis. And in this understanding, the organic crisis may last for years, decades, even centuries. Gramsci wrote about the medieval hegemony crisis. And the source of the hegemony crisis could be, for example, the failure of the ruling class in some major undertaking, or a quantitative accumulation of unrest from below. And there could be organic and apparently inorganic deficient solutions to the crisis of hegemony. Organic solution would be when one party fails in hegemony, but another party can immediately take over the hegemony. But when it doesn't happen, we enter the hegemony crisis. And this is precisely what happened in the Soviet Union, let's say in the end of 1960s. We did have communist hegemony. So, of course, Gramsci understood the Bolshevik Revolution as the war of maneuver, where Bolsheviks came to power quickly because of the weakness of the Russian Empire, basically because of its collapse. But when they came to power, they were very much concerned that they need to expand their rule, that they need to involve the majority of the Russian societies, primarily peasants, into the new state. And so they did use vast terror, but at the same time, they did mobilize active participatory, rational consent with the rule of the new Soviet state, via the construction of multiple hegemony institutions. The Communist Party was, of course, the most important of them, and it was the center of the new hegemony. But it was not just about the party, it was about the multiple organizations organizing the labor, women, the young people, the expansion of the press, expansion of the political discussion. The people in the Soviet Union were not scared. They were actually very much politicized. But, and the success of this communist hegemony was actually the most evident during the years of de-Stalinization, during the so-called thaw period, Khrushchev rule, which actually saw the massive activization of the Soviet citizens who were criticizing the Soviet state, but they were criticizing it for not fulfilling the socialist ideals. That's where the concept of the socialism with a human face comes from. So they were so taken by the communist hegemony that they were criticizing the Communist Party for not being proper communists, for failing in the communist project. And that actually it's an evidence of the strength of the communist hegemony, not its weakness. But that activization in the 1960s was incorporated in the Communist Party, and the result was the start of the hegemony crisis, when the majority of the Soviet citizens started to see the Soviet state as completely alien from them, alien to their interests, and not presenting any any leadership in any progressive changes in our country. And this is the start of the hegemony crisis, which we have been actually until this moment. This crisis started about at the end of 1960s, the beginning of the 1970s. 1968 could be kind of like a very symbolic date for the start of this crisis. And the crisis was not limited simply to the Soviet Union. We could speak about the hegemony crisis in the Europe, in the Northern America, but the and that's why the this omnipresent discussion of the crisis of political representation, why people do not vote, why people vote for some populist parties, why they do not believe into the in the mainstream parties, and so on and so forth. So there is something universal in this condition, but in the Soviet Union, the depth of the hegemony crisis was probably the strongest in the whole world. And there are several reasons for this. First, the post-Soviet ruling class of political capitalists severely lacked legitimacy. They were, from the very start, perceived as thieves, as mafia, as bandits who captured the collapsing Soviet states and who exploited it, who exploited the those property, those achievements that were the result of the mobilization of the whole Soviet people for their private enrichment. There was no ideological, no religious, no traditional legitimation for their rule, unlike in the core capitalist countries. They became rich in the matter of months, almost years. That primitive accumulation that happened in Europe during centuries. And then, and that was happening in basically in our eyes. There was, of course, very limited opportunities for hegemony under the demodernization changes, where everything is contracting and the pie cannot be divided in good pieces. There was, because of the lack of any social revolutionary threat, there was even lack of motivation to lead, not simply to dominate. And leadership, of course, requires more from the ruling class. Hegemony is more demanding kind of rule than the lack of hegemony. And finally, this political representation relationship was undermined both from above and also from below. From above, the new political parties in the post-Soviet countries, they were reproducing and even exacerbating some of the worst features of the late Communist Party of the Soviet Union. Meaningless ideology, which nobody believed in. The careerism, opportunism, the basically lack of any belief that a party is actually the unity of the like-minded people, but not some tool to basically to be exploited for some private interests. That's actually the problem between economic corporate stage and more like politically developed stage. The parties were not pushing the political development of the ruling class, but they were rather seen as the representatives of very specific, very particular interests. But on the other hand, the even the economic corporate consciousness was weak. And for Gramsci, it was not problematized, although when we speak about the interests of merchants, miners, peasants, it's already the interest of some quite broad group, broader than informal patronage networks, ethnic groups, families, and so on. But in the Soviet Union, this representation of the corporate interests were repressed. They were important, but they were moved to the informal sphere. And when the structure of the communist hegemony degraded, rotted, and basically collapsed, what remained? These informal networks. And instead of the interests of at least some socially bounded groups, we've got the informally patronage structured society. When people could, in very contradictory way, combine a huge criticism towards the elite, thieves and mafia, but on the other hand, instead of mobilizing collectively in defense of their interests, they were relying on the same informal patronage channels in order to solve their problems. This is kind of like the bifurcated Philistine consciousness, which was very much predominant in our countries. So if you have hegemony crisis, what are the solutions to this? Did we have any organic solution? In fact, what we did have were the two deficient solutions. One could be described with Gramscian concept of Caesarism, the personalistic authoritarian rule which consolidated in the most of the post-Soviet countries, Russia, Belarus, Azerbaijan, and most of the Central Asia, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, so on. In Gramsci, Caesarism is a particular solution for the situation which is characterized by the equilibrium of forces heading towards catastrophe. And Caesarism is defensive restorative. It's coercion and also only passive consent of the masses. Nothing like active, enthusiastic, hegemonic support. The masses simply prefer the stability to the risk of the catastrophic changes. And Gramsci has a discussion of the pre-modern and modern Caesarism types, how the Caesarist leaders who relied on military, like Napoleon Bonaparte, that kind of rule transforms into the
thank you. Marcus sighs, the lonesome organ grinder cries, the silver saxophones say I should refuse you. The cracked bells and washed out horns blow into my face with scorn, but it's not that way, I wasn't born to lose you. I want you, I want you, I want you so bad. Honey, I want you. The drunken politician leaps upon the street where mothers weep, and the saviors who are fast asleep, they wait for you. And I wait for them to interrupt me drinking from my broken cup and ask me to open up the gate for you. I want you, I want you. Yes, I want you so bad. Honey, I want you. Now my fathers, they've gone down. True love, they've been without it. But all their daughters put me down, 'cause I don't think about it. Well, I return to the Queen of Spades and talk with my chambermaid. She knows it. Not afraid to look at her. She is good to me, and there's nothing she doesn't see. She knows where I'd like to be, but it doesn't matter. I want you, I want you. Yes, I want you so bad. Honey, I want you. Now you're dancing child with this Chinese suit. He spoke to me, I took his flute. No, I wasn't very cute to him, was I? But I did it because he lied, and because he took you for a ride. Because time is on his side, and because I want you. I want you. Yes, I want you so bad.